This is Taos Center for the Arts Radio Hour. I'm Chelsea Reedy. Today we talk with journalist Martin Smith. Smith's most recent book, Going to Trinidad, A Doctor, A Colorado Town, and Stories from an Unlikely Gender Crossroads, was published in April of 2021. Going to Trinidad focuses on gender confirmation surgeries that were performed in Trinidad, Colorado, from 1969 until 2010. The book highlights Stanley Biber, a surgeon whose work beckoned an estimated 6,000 people to come to Trinidad looking for support and procedures to assist with their transition to their self-identified gender. It also follows the experiences of two people, Claudine Griggs and Walt Hayer, who experienced very different outcomes after having operations. Colette LaBeouf talked with Martin Smith. They discuss both his journalistic approach and the importance of sharing the story. Smith tells us how this project came about.
When I moved to Colorado from Southern California in 2016, I started hearing about this, unusual story of Trinidad, Colorado, and how for 41 years it was known by what the New York Times once indelicately called the sex change capital of the world between 1969 and 2010. And I started looking into it and researching it and was pleasantly surprised to find nobody had actually written that book. You know, it's not very often as a journalist that you find a story that's complete like that. It's got a beginning, a middle, and an end. All the characters are generally still alive, and you can go out and kind of write that book from scratch. So I saw an opportunity to do that. But I think if you really want to go back to where this began for me, you have to go back into the early 1990s. I have a very large and sprawling family. And every 2 years we get together for a family reunion. One branch of the family, there are four branches. One branch picks a spot and we all converge on it and just hang out for a few days. And in 1992, the reunion happened to be in Estes Park, Colorado.
Okay.
And we were all staying in the YMCA of the Rockies Family Reunion Lodge. So there were 75 or 80 of us under one roof. And that was the reunion that my cousin, one of my cousins, decided she was going to announce to the family that she was transitioning. Mm-hmm. And what she did was fairly remarkable. She came for the first breakfast, the first morning at breakfast, she came down wearing a single post earring in one ear, which was unusual for her. I mean, as a male, living as a male at the time, we all knew her as a male. That was not radical, but it was interesting.
Second morning,
she came down with an earring in each ear, a simple post earring. By the fourth morning, she was wearing these very feminine earrings. And that was her coming out. That's how she announced to the family that she was transitioning. And, there was a range of reactions. Her mother kind of melted down. A good Southern Methodist woman didn't deal with it particularly well. Others were very supportive. And I'm watching all this and I'm just thinking, well, that was interesting. But I really don't know what just happened, but it was very interesting. And so, over the next 10 years, I watched my cousin Sarah transform from a very shy, socially awkward male to a very engaged, look you in the eye, have a great conversation female. And it was striking. It was, this was obviously somebody who had suddenly become comfortable with who they are. And, I was struck by that. And then 10 years later, we were at another reunion and I was talking to Sarah and I just assumed naively that anybody who transitioned would have surgery to complete the transition. Well, that's not really the case.
Right.
You've got to have enough money. You've got to have a tolerance for pain. You've got to have a lot of things if you're planning to transition, take that final surgical step in it. But I just asked naively, I said, so I guess you're going to get the surgery then. And she said, no, I don't think I'm going to get the surgery. I kind of like my penis. And I just, my head sort of exploded and I didn't, you know, I looked at her and I said, I don't understand anything about what you just said. Uh-huh. You know, it's still mystifying to me, you know, and I, like many people, grew up in a gender binary world where there were males and females, and, you know, you were either, you could be one or a few degrees one side or the other of those poles, but there was this middle that I never understood and never really explored. And so along, you know, again, flash forward to 2016, and I start hearing about Trinidad, and I started thinking, this story might be a good opportunity to explore and unpack all those questions I have in my head through a real place with real people. And it, you know, this was happening at the beginning of 2017 when I started really looking into this.
Yes.
At a time when transgender men and women were under attack, not just civil rights, but, you know, they were being denied opportunities to serve in the military. Athletic competitions were open to question. You know, the great public restroom debate was going on. They were being demonized and dehumanized. And I saw the Trinidad story as a way to introduce people like me to transgender men and women in a way that showed them as three-dimensional human beings dealing with these profound identity issues. And I thought Trinidad offered the opportunity to tell that story in a way that people like me might be willing to pick up, whereas they might not be willing to pick up a book on queer theory, for example. This is a book about real people in a real place.
Right. You do talk in the book, which is so interesting to me, about how all these things came together in popular culture and in politics to kind of raise the issue, right? And this, what I really love about the book is, like you said, the personal stories, not only of the individuals who experience it, but also the surgical side, right? And what a fascinating character this surgeon was.
His name was Stanley Biber, who started doing these surgeries in 1969. Just by accident, almost. Someone came to him, a social worker that he worked with in the county, in Los Animas County in Southern Colorado, came to him and they had a meeting. And at the end of the meeting, you know, she said, would you be willing to do my surgery? And he said, sure. You know, he was sort of this very confident surgeon with a God complex. I can do anything. And he said, sure, I can do your surgery. What do you got? And she said, I'm transsexual. And he goes, well, what's that? You know, and she explained, you know, she was born biologically male and wanted to have cosmetic surgery to transform her genitalia into female. And he tracked down some drawings. You know, they were hand drawings that he got from a surgeon at Johns Hopkins who had done a few of these surgeries. Looked at him, kind of twisted him around upside down and said, yeah, I think I can do that. And did. And it was a success. And word spread very quickly. I mean, back then, you have to remember, this was all done on the down low. You had to know a guy who knew a guy who could refer you to a surgeon who may or may not be a good surgeon, or it may or may not be licensed. You know, it was that sort of thing, you know. Here was a real surgeon at a real hospital in a real place who said, yeah, come, I can do this. That welcoming atmosphere, suddenly word got around to the point where going to Trinidad became the euphemism for actually having the surgery. Many of the gender clinics around the country, Johns Hopkins, UCLA, were shutting down their clinics. And all of a sudden, he was the only game in town. Everybody went to Trinidad.
Why were they shutting down their clinics?
They had decided through, there was at Johns Hopkins, for example, there was a director of that program, their gender program, who had decided that surgery was not a good therapy.
I see.
For people with gender dysphoria. And so Johns Hopkins decided to shut down their operation. I can't remember exactly what the cause at UCLA was, but they were backing away from it at a time when he said, yeah, I'll do these. And so Trinidad became a destination of choice for men and women all over the world who wanted to have surgery. And Stanley Biber, keep in mind, you know, this is a he's a country doctor, basically. He's also a rancher. He gets up in the morning, he mends fences, you know, pokes his dogies, and then he goes in and does surgeries. And he was the general surgeon for Trinidad. So he was doing all kinds of surgeries. And he's a Jewish surgeon operating at a Catholic hospital, staffed almost entirely by the Sisters of Charity.
I'm so interested in this collision of the people coming there, the religion, the background of the surgeon, but these nuns that keep showing up in the book. And how fascinating, and what an amazing story too for the individuals, that these nuns are remembered mostly in these accounts as empathetic, even mm-hmm. though the church maybe had a position on it and didn't say or whatever. Right. I'm fascinated by this intersection.
It was like peeling an onion, you know, finding layer after layer of interest in this story. There's a famous legend that goes around Trinidad that at some point, one of the Sisters of Charity wrote to the Vatican, you know, with an inquiry, you know, okay, this is what we're doing. Is this okay? You know, and as the story goes, the Vatican, someone at the Vatican wrote back and said, just keep doing your ministry. You know, you're doing good ministerial work, keep doing it. From which they assumed that was a blessing, that they could keep doing this without fear. Well, we're not sure that ever happened. You know, mm-hmm. there are people in town who swear they've seen these letters, but when you ask them to produce these letters, they can't. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of researchers, female researchers, who had looked much farther into this than I did to try and verify that this had happened. They were never able to verify it. So it may have happened, but we can't prove that it happened.
That was Colette LaBeouf talking with journalist and writer Martin Smith. Smith is talking about his latest book, Going to Trinidad, in which the stories of Trinidad's surgeons and transgender pilgrims offer insight into the lives of individuals whose personal struggle is often amplified by cultural pressures and prejudices. Up next after the break, Smith tells us about the town of Trinidad and the unlikely encounter between this small town's culture and the need for gender affirmation surgery. Here's The Darkling Sea, a song by Jack LaRaine, about relationships which, like life itself, are repeating cycles of growth and change.
Everything threatens to crumble around. Oh, I have seen how so very sweet it can feel, and oh, how terribly empty. How many times can I feel these things over till finally something inside me must say, I'll eternity. And how much love can a single world handle? How many times can I live these things through? How many bright stars, how many dark passages? Make no mistake of it, I love every last one of you. For in the end, each of us goes. things on our own. Sweet way. In the end, each of us goes on our own. Sweet way. They say, for the light of the day reaches everyone, everywhere, somehow. The time is now for children of song and life that goes on after somebody said it was somehow bound to end. True, what they say, but the light of the day, while it shines, is worth all of its leaving. The colors they may form a beautiful gray for a while on the dawn while she's rising. And live they will strong while the light it goes on until suddenly evening has fallen.
Welcome back to TCA Radio Hour. I'm Chelsea. We're listening to A Beautiful Gray, a song by Jack Lorraine.
And I believe that we have found a piece of heaven's sound. I believe that we have found the peace of heaven.
Our guest today is journalist Martin Smith. His latest book, Going to Trinidad, was released in April of 2021. In 1969, after surgeon Stanley Biber started operating on individuals with gender dysphoria, this phrase, going to Trinidad, became a euphemism for gender confirmation surgery, both in the American transgender community, but also in the broader international scene. Trinidad is a small town in southern Colorado, close to the border of New Mexico, only 21 miles north of Raton. With a population of about 9,000 inhabitants, this location was unlikely to become what was known by generations of transgender people as, quote, the sex change capital of the world. And yet, it did. Smith tells us about the unusual story of this place.
I think the unlikeliest of all cultures is probably the best way to look at that. Trinidad, you know, first came to prominence, you know, during the Santa Fe Trail trading days. It was a major stop along the Santa Fe Trail, it attracted, you know, Western pioneers like Bat Masterson. He was the first sheriff, and Kit Carson operated around there. So it's got all this kind of deep Western history associated with the Santa Fe Trail. But then in the sort of late 1800s, Colorado Fuel and Iron, which was a Rockefeller operation, mining operation, opened the Allen Mine, and it became a coal mining center. And as part of that, it became very ethnically diverse because the Rockefellers would recruit laborers for their coal mines and their steel mills from Eastern Europe and Greece. And, you know, you had Italians and all sorts of Eastern, you know, Europeans were brought into Trinidad to work in the coal mines and work in the mills. One of the reasons they recruited that way was because if they didn't speak the same languages, they were less likely to unionize. So for the next 50 years, it was a coal mining town. With a brief period where it was sort of a Chicago mob refugee town. If Al Capone had one of his guys who did a hit in Chicago and he needed to lay low for a while, he'd send him to Trinidad, where he would work in the Colorado Cheese Company, which was just a front, a money laundering front, food operation. So it had that little aspect of it as well. And then in the late 1960s, it starts to become known as the coal industry is dying out. It starts to become known as the Center for Gender Confirmation Surgery. I mean, just the unlikeliest of all transformations. And since then, since that ended in 2010, it's become a marijuana crossroads because the surrounding states, it's near four different state borders. And those, Colorado is the first among those to legalize recreational marijuana. So it became a marijuana crossroads. And now it has become, with the acquisition of about 30,000 acres of pristine wilderness beneath Fisher's Peak, which is a major mesa there in town, it's becoming Colorado's newest state park. So it's becoming a destination for recreational tourism.
Interesting.
So, you know, Trinidad is itself is a city of transitions.
I want to go back to kind of the way the book is set up and ask you how you decided on focusing on the individuals that you did.
So, you know, when I first started researching Trinidad, I thought, well, we've got some great main characters here. We've got Stanley Biber, who is the original surgeon. We've got Dr. Marcy Bowers, who is his protege, a transgender surgeon from Seattle who moved to Trinidad to take over his practice. And then I knew I wanted to focus on some patients, right, and tell patient stories. And you think, well, okay, so over those 41 years, there were 6,000 medical pilgrims who came to Trinidad. There's endless numbers of stories to tell. But then reality sets in and you realize, well, there's HIPAA regulations. Those are doctor-patient relationships. And I am not privileged to have access to those.
Right.
There's no published list of all their patients where you can track them down. So that list of 6,000 very quickly shrinks. There's also a phenomenon among transgender men and women. There's a reluctance to go back and talk about or relive their experiences before their transition. Mm-hmm. You know, that was before. I am who I am now. So that person is dead. In fact, there's a term, dead naming. If, for example, you call Caitlyn Jenner Bruce Jenner, you're dead naming her. You're naming a person who's no longer alive. Mm-hmm. And that played out in my case because very few men and women in the transgender community want to talk much about their lives before their transition. And what I was looking for were people willing to talk about before, during, and after, you know, before, during their time in Trinidad and after their time in Trinidad, and what the arc of their lives was like. And there's just not very many people willing to do that or comfortable doing that. So that left me with people who had spoken publicly or written publicly about their experiences, not just their before lives, but their experience in Trinidad, and who were still alive and willing to talk to me about their lives since Trinidad. So I came down very quickly to two people. There's a woman named Claudine Griggs, whose surgery was done by Stanley Biber in the early 90s. I used her in the book as the embodiment of how things can go really well, how this can improve the life of a transgender woman. And she was terrific. She had written a memoir called Passage Through Trinidad, Journal of a Sex Change, that, you know, included so much rich detail about her experience in Trinidad and so much honest thought and articulation of her experience. She was kind of a no-brainer. She was just and she was willing to talk to me. She was perfectly willing to go back and talk about all of that. There was another character who had written about it, but in a less positive way, a guy named Walt Heyer, who had surgery in the early 1980s with Stanley Biber in Trinidad. But it was rocky from the start. He had backed out of it once. He'd sort of chickened out on his first try. He went and got it. It didn't solve his problem. And the reason it didn't solve his problem is he was never gender dysphoric. He had been misdiagnosed many years before by a therapist. who thought he was gender dysphoric, but in fact he had dissociative disorder, multiple personalities, if you will. And surgery was never going to solve his problem. And so he spent 3 or 4 decades after his surgery, you know, struggling. And flopping around like a fish in the bottom of a boat. He, you know, he was an alcoholic. He was had drug issues. He was flipping back and forth between male and female identities. That sort of trauma finally ended when he found religion, you know, converted to Christianity. And that sort of settled his mind enough that but then he emerged shortly thereafter as an advocate against surgery, saying surgery is not a good idea. He leads something called the sex change regret movement for the very small percentage of people who might actually regret it after they've done it. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine he's become a lightning rod for the LGBT community. He says out loud all the things that gender binary people like me think, you know, what if I do this and I regret it? You know, mm-hmm. This could be a mistake. He says those things out loud. Because he says those things out loud, he's been adopted by conservative media, for example.
I see.
If they want to have him on as a guest, as a counterpoint to someone who advocates for surgery, even though he's never been gender dysphoric and he represents himself as somebody who's an expert on gender dysphoria, he's not. Mm-hmm. And yet he is the most visible spokesman against gender mm-hmm. surgery. Mm-hmm. So that's how I ended up with those two people, because I thought not that there was an equivalence between, because Claudine right. Griggs' experience represents probably 90 to 97% of the experiences of transgender men and women who have surgery. Walt Heyer represents 3 to 5% of those. So I didn't, the scale didn't balance there, but I thought both stories were important from a storytelling perspective. And so I included both.
Martin Smith went beyond including the two distinct narratives. He also asked Marcy Bowers, a prominent figure in gender affirmation surgery, to contribute to the conversation. Dr. Bowers came to Trinidad in 2003 to learn from Stanley Biber. She now operates in Burlingame, California. She is a pioneer of gender affirmation surgery and the first woman worldwide to have a personal transgender history while performing transgender surgery. Bowers wrote the last section of the book, contributing with a critical eye to the stories that Smith reported on. Here's Colette LaBeouf.
And the Marcy Bowers piece at the end, mm-hmm. Tell me about that, because I'm interested. I feel like when I read that after your book, as an afterword, I'm curious. It feels like, I don't want to say a defense, but a response that is, yes, at turns feels defensive about some of your focus. Can you talk about what that was like negotiating that inclusion?
You know, it was my idea to include Marcy Bowers afterward. I asked her to write it. I told her I would edit it, but I was not going to tell her what to say or anything like that. And I knew she had some concerns about the book. The first and foremost was the inclusion of Walt Heyer in the book. Mm-hmm. She felt that he did not belong in the book. He did not represent the typical experience of transgender men and women who go through surgery. She's right. He's atypical. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to give her a platform to address that. I wanted to give her an opportunity. The other thing that I knew going into this was that there was going to be some skepticism about me writing this book. I am not transgender. I have not lived that experience. When we first started pitching this book, we did so into a publishing world that was still reeling from American Dirt. Which mm-hmm. was a novel that was written by a woman who was, you know, marginally Hispanic, but it was about the Hispanic immigrant experience. And there was a great debate going on. In fact, they canceled her book tour because there were so many, you know, concerns about someone misrepresenting themselves, you know, and their experience. You know, I'm not transgender. I don't pretend to understand that experience from any point of view other than my own as a journalist from an outsider's perspective. And so I wanted Marcy Bowers to, you know, who is transgender herself, mm-hmm. to kind of confront that and say, you know, he made some choices writing this book that I disagree with, that I would not have made. That's all good conversation as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely.
Let's have that conversation. Mm-hmm. I did. You know, I don't think anybody, any transgender writer who would have tackled this project would have included Walt Heyer. Mm-hmm. I knew that going into it, but I reported it that way because I felt it was an important perspective, mm-hmm. to offer and then push back on.
Yes.
And in the book, I let Marcy Bowers, I let Susan Stryker, who's a transgender historian, I let them push back on the arguments that Walt Heyer makes.
Right.
Because I think it's important to keep him in perspective. Again, mm-hmm. he's someone who's never been gender dysphoric, who represents himself now as someone who is an expert on gender dysphoria. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be able to make that point in three dimensions. Right. But I wanted Dr. Bowers to be able to kind of deal with all that and bring her own perspective to it. Mm-hmm. And I thought she did it very well.
That was Martin Smith talking about his latest work, Going to Trinidad. The book portrays surgeon Stanley Biber and his work in Trinidad, Colorado, performing gender affirmation surgeries between 1969 and 2010. The book also shares the stories of Claudine Griggs and Walt Heyer, two people who traveled to Trinidad for surgeries. With this book, Smith invites readers to explore the world of gender and sexuality with an open mind and heart. More from Smith about his journalistic work and his approach to this story when we come back. But first, here's Naked River, a song by Jack LaRaine. Naked River is a tribute to the life of his cousin, Charlie Plashia, and memories of glimpses at nature's wonders.
Way west to the rim of the river gorge, climbed my way down from the sage mesa sea, dreamed my way then to the mountains out yonder there, and buried my way with the memory of me crossing on.
Welcome back to TCA Radio Hour. I'm Chelsea Reedy. Today, journalist Martin Smith talks with Colette LaBeouf about his book, Going to Trinidad. In this last part of their conversation, Smith considers the challenges and benefits of reporting this story. Some people are skeptical with a white, cisgendered male writing about gender affirmation surgery. His choice of including Walt Heyer's story is another element of contention because Heyer's story is deemed not to be representative of the majority of experiences for people who undergo this surgery. Here's Smith discussing how writing this book informed his understanding of gender dysphoria, affirmation surgery, and how he hopes to share this with his audience.
It kind of happened the way I imagined it would happen. The book has not been fully embraced by the LGBT community. That didn't surprise me because of the choices I made of including Walt Heyer, because I'm not a transgender writer, because, you know, a cisgender white cisgender male writing this story, some people are skeptical from the start of that. And therefore, I understand that skepticism. You know, I'm not sure what I can do about that. I approached it as a journalist. So, you know, it has gotten, you know, I mentioned Susan Stryker, who's a transgender historian. She wrote a book called Transgender History, which is sort of the definitive chronicle of transgender history in America. She did a nice blurb for it. Marcy Bowers is, you know, promoting it on her website. You know, people who have taken the time to read the book have embraced it. People who see me and see my decision to include Walt Heyer are probably never going to read it.
Gotcha.
And okay. I understood that calculation going in. Mm-hmm. I have been pleasantly surprised by the fact that it seems to be reaching the audience I intended it to reach. Mm-hmm. When I talk to book groups, when I talk to, organizations, historical organizations. In fact, I'm talking Friday night with the Grand County Historical Association here in Colorado. Uh-huh. They do embrace the book because it's a revelation to them. Now, for example, the way it was to me, a revelation, understanding for the first time that genitalia and gender are not the same thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think many, 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 many people make that assumption that, mm-hmm. With a quick glance between your legs when you're born, you can tell the gender of somebody. Mm-hmm. Well, genitalia is the end result of a long biological process. Mm-hmm. We're all born with the same genital substructure in utero. And sometime around 11 weeks in utero, the hormones kick in and estrogen makes those tissues develop one way and testosterone makes those tissues develop another way, but they're all the same tissues. Mm-hmm. That's a biological process. It usually has something to do. There's usually a correlation with gender and self-perception, but not always. Mm-hmm. And so, gender is an issue of self-perception, and who better to decide what gender you are than you? Mm-hmm. And people who are going to make those assumptions based on what's between your legs is kind of irrelevant. It's you that has to define yourself. And understanding that distinction between genitalia and gender was a revelation to me, as I think it is to many people who I'm talking to about that sort of thing now. That's a long answer to your short question about how it's been received. It's been received very well by the people that I wanted to read the book.
So interesting. I mean, you talk about being a journalist, and I think about journalism, and this is kind of veering a little bit from the book, but I think about journalism as journalists tell us about things we don't know often. And they're not necessarily, they become specialists in what they choose to cover. Mm-hmm. So that's also interesting. And I do understand the other side is that if you're not a transgender person, how that might be received by the community as this is not the way we would tell this story. And yet for this wider audience, you're kind of offering it as, look at, I spent a lot of time with this and maybe you can too,
And I, my model in this is a book called Becoming Nicole. Mm-hmm. It was written by a Washington Post reporter named Amy Ellis Nutt. And it was the story of two identical twins that were born in New England and how one was transgender and one was not. And it was the story of how these parents dealt with that both socially and in terms of school situations and ultimately in terms of the justice system. They had to pursue rights for their transgender child through the court system. She's not transgender. She approached it as a journalist, as an outsider. It's an extraordinary story, and as is the Trinidad story. And that's how I approached it. And there are plenty of really wonderful transgender memoirs out there. My favorite being Jenny Boylan's book about her transition. And so I didn't pretend to try to write one of those books. I can't. But I can be a reporter and mm-hmm. I can be an empathetic inquisitor and I'm a pretty good researcher. I mean, I did show up more than a decade after Stanley Biber had died, the original surgeon. And so it was a matter of reconstructing his life and reconstructing his career in Trinidad through people who are still there. Mm-hmm. That's the work of a journalist.
Well, I really enjoyed the book and I enjoyed learning, a lot of what I didn't know about this experience. And especially through Claudine's, the passages with Claudine, the articulation was very easy to connect to that story. I really enjoyed it, but also fascinating to me. Just like you say, the couldn't get farther from the history of Trinidad to have this have been the center. And I've only been through Trinidad once, and I remember somebody telling me that's what happens in Trinidad, or this is what it's famous for, is gender affirming surgery or confirmation surgery. So it was great to be able to learn about it through your book.
Well, thanks. I went back in 2019. I had been working on this book project for a couple of years, and I wrote a piece for the front page of the LA Times about the curious lack of commemoration of that in Trinidad. There are no statues to Stanley Biber. There's not even a plaque in the hospital where he operated all those years. And I just thought that was interesting that, you know, what did that say? Did that mean Trinidad was ashamed of this? Did that mean that, what did it mean? So I went back to write that story, and I was really struck by, you know, the absence of it. Since it ended in 2010, Marcy Bowers moved her practice to the Bay Area in California. I was really struck by the absence of any commemoration of that chapter in its history. But I was delighted to find in the Trinidad History Museum there was an exhibit called Borderlands. And it explored the idea of how remarkable things can happen in places where nobody's watching. And Trinidad certainly kind of falls into that category. And lo and behold, there was a small exhibit of Stanley Biber's surgical implements and the camera he used to take pictures of his patients. And suddenly he had found a place, you know, and I called the woman at Colorado History, which is the state historical association. And she had put that exhibit together, the Borderlands exhibit. And I said, so why did Stanley Biber happen in Trinidad? And she said, well, it's not unusual. You know, the media glare in the LA and the New York media markets, you know, it's so intense that things like this can't really happen there, but they can happen somewhere far away that nobody's really heard of or nobody's visited. It's not on the way to anywhere. And yet all of a sudden it's the World Center for Gender Confirmation Surgery. Those things happen in Borderlands. And I thought that was a really interesting way to look at it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, this has been great. Thank you so much for talking to me about the book. And I'd love to know what you're working on now or what's next. I know this is like one of those writer questions. Everyone is like,
Yeah, and this is my 10th book. I've written 5 novels and 5 nonfiction books. And every one of those books was going to be my last.
Okay.
Because they're a lot of work and I'm not getting any younger. But I'm taking a year to just think about what's next. I've got a novel in progress that I'm enjoying writing, but I'm president of the local Habitat for Humanity chapter, and I like to fish and that sort of thing. And I'm just sort of letting a shiny object catch my attention, and then
I
may run after it and I may not.
That was Martin Smith talking with Colette LaBeouf. Smith's book, Going to Trinidad, was published last April. He has written works of fiction and journalism that are available at your favorite bookstore.
Upon your patio, I can see you smiling in the wind, in the pretty wind. I can see you there, your heart upon your lacy sleeve. You wave and smile until they leave, then face your eyelids to the sky. dark thunder rumble far and wide. It's on your face now, I can see. You know just what it means to be blessed by the pretty wind.
Taos Center for the Arts Radio Hour is supported by this station, KNCE 93.5 FM, streaming live at truetaosradio.com, and our local business partner, Casa Gallina. Music on today's show is by TCA's own Jack Lorraine. Jack moved to New Mexico in 2004, and the song we are listening to, Pretty Wind, was written during the first spring he spent in New Mexico. Plum trees and lilacs were blooming all over Albuquerque. Petals were blowing everywhere in the wind.
Fall far from the tree. You are one blowing just like me. Seems like forever round we spin. Do we meet the garden once again? Blessed by the pretty wind. If you wanna know what I think, the wheel has run me down, and I couldn't get no closer to the ground. But there's nothing I could favor, no direction I could choose. I just couldn't get no closer to the blues. And all the people that I remember, they seem so far away that I couldn't get no lower down today. But I can feel the wind blowing, it'll all be over soon when I wake up to the ever passing through. Yeah, the stars all will be shining, and we'll all be dancing too, to the music of the ever passing through, passing through, passing through. It's the music of the ever passing through.